Okay, today we're going to be speaking about checking and cleaning a challah between shakes. So first we talk about checking the challah, and that is to say that the din is that before someone shechts, he needs to check his challah to make sure there are no pekimas. If he finds if he checks it beforehand and it was good, and afterwards he finds a pekima, then it's a question, we don't know when that pekima happened. Did it happen before, during, or after the shechita? And therefore the animal is considered a safek nevela and you can't use it. Because the pekima may have happened before or during the shechita, and the animal would be in veil. What happens if the person shechts many animals before he comes to do the check after shechita? I mean, he checked it at the beginning when he did five animals, then, and he finds a pekima at the end of all five of them. And since he didn't check in between, we don't know when that happened. And therefore, the din is that all those animals he shechted are considered to be safek nevela, and they're not kosher, all those that happened in between. And that sounds so typical. In fact, it happens all the time in poultry slaughterhouses. That's because on a commercial level, birds get shechted so quickly and so many per minute or per hour that it's not feasible for them to have the shechet check his chalaf in between every single one. And it's worth it, financially it's worth it, to have them shechet many birds and not check them fully afterwards, and take the chance that they might have to declare them on nevelas. So, for example, in one place that I know of, they shecht about 8 or 10 chickens per minute, and every 6 minutes, the shechet gets a warning that tells them, check your chalaf. What happens if his chalaf ends up having a pekimi after that amount of time? Then all those birds that he shechted, they know we're on the line it goes to, all the birds that he shechted, anybody else's who are mixed in with it, are all discarded as nevelas. So they're taking a chance, and a bird, not so common that didn't actually become have a pekim in it altogether, and they're taking their chances because it's worth it. They said they could do many shechitas and keep on going, and once in a while we end up, in fact, having to throw birds out because of that. Okay, now what's sort of common is with daka is that sheep and goats, behem daka, the shechtim sort of take their chances, and they'll go up to like about 3, the sefirah will let them go, and others will do up to like 3 shechitas before shechting the chalaf. There isn't as much pressure, but also it's sort of like an in-between case, but for gases, which is, cattle, then the sefirah requires that they check their chalaf every single time, before and after. That's because it's the most likely for the shechita of a gasa to cause it to get a pekima. And of course the laws, in case you could declare extra animals as unavailable, is more significant, and therefore every behemoth gasa you have to check before and afterwards. You check before and afterwards, so that way each potential pekima only affects one animal. Now, as sort of an aside to that, is Rabbi Fishbein, his professional feeling is that Pegimas happen in the Sakin mainly to do with the skill of the Sheikhet, which is to say is if the Sheikhet prepares his Chalav properly and he Shechts properly, then he's not going to have a Pegima. He may get a little roughness to his Chalav and it needs to be touched up and fixed up, but a real Pegima would only happen either because the Chalav wasn't really so great when he started, or something to do with the way he actually did the Shechita. He uses that as a measure of how well the Sheikha did it. And on the other side also is that you want to see, check the Chalav to learn and to understand different kinds of begimas and roughnesses and what does or doesn't count. The way to check it is between Shechitas, because there you could see, first of all, something happened to it, and every Shechita has a little bit of an effect on the Chalav, and you can notice all these different nuances to be able to know and say that is something or it's not something. Okay, so now another thing about checking it is that soap is very good for cleaning, of course, but soap can leave a film on the challah, and therefore that makes it hard to feel pekimas. It sort of makes it too smooth, you might miss something. So Rabbi Fishbein does not allow our shechtim to shecht to use soap when they clean the challah. Others even go as far, don't want challah and check when they're wet, that's a different thing, don't do that. But as far as soap, he tells people not to use soap on their challah when they're in the base of shechita. Another thing is that the Pesachim brings that when there's wind blowing, it's hard to notice the pekimas on a knife, and therefore, so that just pay attention to that is when there's air conditioning or fans blowing. As an example, I was in Ashrita where the shechel was hot. They had a fan blowing right on him, right by the place where he did the shechita. So he has to be careful when he checks his chalaf to stay out of the wind or the blowing over there from that. Okay, now the Gemara says talks of different ways that people check the chalazim. What we know, of course, you're checking with your finger. Once we're checking with the skin, that the prima government says we really should do it, he's upset actually that people stop doing that. We just do now with the fingernail. And that may have something to do with what we spoke about, the modern version of it, not the prima government, what we spoke about last time, that the halachim we use maybe can't even be checked with a finger. It's a question. But one of the things that the Gemara talks about is that people would check it in the sun. They'd hold it up to the light, and you could see by looking at the blade, you're looking at the edge, at the hood, to see whether there's a begim or not. So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring that. The Gemara mentions the people who did that. It's not put in Shulchan Aruch. The Taz talks about it's a positive thing you should do that, and the Zaki Tshuva, excuse me, the Shach implies that you don't need to do that. The Shach makes it sound like if you were to find some kind of a problem when you did that, it would be a problem. You don't have to be choshesh and therefore check so well. And Zaki Tshuva talks back and forth about whether you should or shouldn't do it. And in Lamaisa, Shechtim are not doing that as a rule. But sometimes if there's, you know, two people and one person thinks it's a beam, one thinks it's not, they need to pick it up to the light to help them sort of like be machriya between them whether there isn't a problem. Okay? Excuse me. Okay, so now let's move on to now that we've checked the chalav and the chalav is clean and we check it after shechitah and it has no beginning in it either. Wonderful. So let's think about now what happened to this chalav during the shechitah. And that is as follows. When you shechtu the chalav and there's blood left on top of it, the fact that blood, of course, is treif, you don't eat blood, but even though blood is treif, and you're about to put that on for the next shechtu on the next animal, even if there'd be blood left over, which typically there's not, but even if there would be blood left over, and you didn't rinse it off, then the din is that there's no problem that blood is going to be balua into the next animal, because we, as a chashash at the Beis HaShechita is Roseach. You don't have to worry about that because we say, since it's Targ LaFukei Dam, the animal that's being shechted now is spitting out its blood, so therefore it doesn't absorb blood from the chalav. That's not a problem. However, what happens if the chalav was used to shecht in the veil or a trefa? So now that it's not just a question of the blood, now if there's any shamnun, there's any fat left on the, or grease left on the knife, that's treif, because it's from an available from a treifa. There's no targ l'miflet over there. So there the din is, you're supposed to rub it off. The Dabar Kasher, the Shulchan Aruch says, the minig is l'kan chayofa b'seir ha'behem, like just wipe on the side, you know, an animal's hair, or just wash it somehow. That's if you use it once for that. What happens if you regularly use it for shechting treifa? Then you're supposed to do an itza beforehand. And so it's a sakin shal makri, a goyish chav, meaning it was used all the time, then you're supposed to hashkaza to sharpen it, and not even, l'chatzir, you shouldn't even rely on it. What happens if you didn't do these things? You didn't clean it properly, each one with fish, which one you didn't do. Then you're supposed to wash the base of shechita to get rid of any shamnunas that might have been left over, and the Taz says you should maybe even do removal, kedei klipa of the base of shechita. So the Simcha Dasha talks about this, and he says you should clean the knife. Shleishar left shum sham nunis. There shouldn't be any grease, any fat left over on the chalav, in order that you should use it for the next time. And then he gives a test, and he says, here's a test that you should do. You should put water on the sakin, and if it's completely clean, the water will slide down. And if there's some shanunas left over, then it won't. And here's like a little demonstration of what it seems like what he's talking about. So you see that the, you know, in the one that's completely clean, the water flows very smoothly. And the other one where there's some shanunas left on the knife, it seems to not go as smoothly. And seemingly that's what the Simcha Dasha is talking about. So when a shaykhet finishes his shechita, and he cleans his knife, and he cleans his knife afterwards, especially what we would do for a behemagasa, that we have to put onto the stone, I'll talk about that in a second, then seemingly it qualifies for all these things, that we don't have to worry about the shamnunas left from one shechita for the next one. If the first one was an avela or a trefa, then we don't have to be so concerned about it. And talking about the stones, it sort of works like this. I may have mentioned this beforehand. That's right. There are two stones usually. One is, this is a rough stone, and this is a smooth stone. I guess in the picture you can't see the difference, except that the smooth one is a little bit better used than the other one is. And the rough stone is what's used for getting the rough edge of the chalav. It makes it the sharpness and hones it down to being a certain, so to speak, moves the most metal and makes it as sharp as can be, the chad. And then the smooth stone, the glatt stone, is what makes it chalak, it makes it smoother. It doesn't remove as much, but it finds it out and makes it work better. And most shochetim have just those two, a rough stone and a glatt stone, or a smooth stone. Some shochetim have more, have different variations of that, but that's by and large what they do. And in fact, the seriously requires by gases that after every shechita, you have to put the chalav back onto the smooth stone to touch it back up and make it ready for the next shechita. Not everybody requires that. But on the other extreme of that, so to speak, is that there are some shechitas that do not allow, some abanim hamachshirim, should I say, that do not allow their shechita to bring their rough stone down to the floor, because they're concerned if your chalav is so bad that you need to put it back onto the rough stone, it means it needs a lot of work, then it's already that knife is not doing so well, and you're going to need so much work on it that it's going to distract you. Either you won't do a good job or distract you considerably from the shechita. So they tell the person, if your knife is so bad that it needs the rough stone, put the knife on the side and pick up a different knife and use a different one. And if all your knives are gone, then you have to get off the floor, because you can't sit and use the rough stone on the floor. You can only use the glatt stone. And others allow it, and they'll say, you got to give him his tools. If you don't give it to him, he's going to keep shechting with a knife that really needs help. So it's a toss-up, which is really the better way to go. And give him the tool, or say to him, listen, if it's that bad, then you shouldn't use it at all. Okay, now, we're talking here about, and we're going to continue talking about, the chalav, and how it's affected by the fact that Hezra Shamdun is on it, and I'm going to talk about another issue in a second. But there's a whole different question about the other knives that are in the Beis HaShechita, not the chalav, other knives, the butchering knives that are used by the rabbinic staff, like for bedikas, and checking other things and cutting things open, and for the rest of the employees who are cutting all kinds of cuts. We're going to talk about those knives some other time, Mirtz Hashem, in the future, about those knives and what their status is. Today we're focusing just on the chalav. It's pretty standard in a shechita, I'm sorry, in a slaughterhouse, pretty standard that there are hot water baths all over the place. And the hot water baths are there to sterilize knives and hooks and all kinds of things. Which is to say is the government wants the knives, everything to be as sterile as possible, of course. And therefore, there are these hot water baths so that when a person stops with his knife, he has a pause between one animal and the next, he should dunk his knife into the hot water for a certain amount of sterilization, for whatever it's worth. So they have them spread around in different places in order to, and yeah, each one of those baths is filled with hot water, like close to boiling temperature, not exactly, but close to boiling, and usually have its own little coil in there. So that little bath is sort of a cleavation of hot water sitting there, and people need to use those around the place. Now, there are times that the USDA will tell the shechtim that they have to stick their chalafim into there also. As you see, Larry Fishbein once asked the USDA himself, the actual back to the USDA office in Washington and said, is it true? Do you need to wash? Do you need to put your chalaf into the hot water? And they said, no, there's no legal requirement to do that. But that might be true from the legality and from the technical rules. You don't have to do that. But the USDA inspectors at each plant are very much in control, and they do it their own way. And if they tell you that you need to do it, then you must take that seriously. They're not, just because you tell them it's not officially in the rules, won't necessarily convince them to that. So the question is, so what happens if that was going on? Would that be okay for the sheikh to put his chalav into this hot water bath between shechitas? Would he be allowed to do that? What's the question? The question is, when talking about beforehand, about a person who shechted a nevela trefer, which of course happens, he shechted something and came in the nevela, or shechted an animal, and how many percent of the animals are trefers? So he shechts plenty of trefers. But over there, we talked about, he has to just clean off, if he's cleaning between one shechita and the next, so there's a drop, there's just a drop that's left, and he can clean that off, and potentially, seemingly, he's going to get it clean every time. He doesn't have to worry about the end being left over from one shechita to the next. But over here, he's sticking his chalav into a bucket of hot water that has in it lots of grease in it from all the previous shechitas that went on, or other things that are going on there. And in there is loads of fat of nevelos and trefes. Every time he shechted one that's a nevela, it would be potentially in there. And every time he did a trefe, it would be in there also. And which is a considerable amount. So now, all of a sudden, we're talking about a knife which has a blia, a noticeable blia of trefe in it. And the question is, so maybe that should be treated like a sakan shel nachri. Maybe we should treat this as the sakan shel nachri means it's a sakan that's used all the time for treif. It has more significant blia in it. So here also, this has significant blia from a different angle because it's dunked into the boiling water, into this kliyushin with the boiling water in it, and where it has in it the veils and treifas also. So maybe we should treat it as a sakan shel nachri and give it the Muhammadin. He shouldn't be allowed to use it. And in fact, there's Aruch HaShulchan who gives that impression that would be correct. However, the Crazy Placey says the following. Crazy Placey says, the reason why Sakhan Shal Machuri is different than a Yid who shechted for an Avel Chayfer is not because the guy does it so many times. It's not because he did it a zillion times and therefore it has a more significant blia than in Reyes. He says, no. The Zipshad is this idea that the Beis HaShechita is Roseach, and the Beis HaShechita has blias going through it, and the Tochet, the Sakinah, causes blias or Shamnunis and things like that, he says, that's not so poshut. So the Chazal told us to be machmir for it, but it's not so poshut that it's really true. So it's a chumrah to be concerned that maybe there are blias over there, or maybe there's the end that's over there, but it's not convincing, or not for sure that really exists. And therefore, Chazal, what the din is telling us is as follows. When you have a shayla of min b'minay, when you have a shayla of min b'she'in b'minay, meaning the guy used his knife to cut a different min. You're shechting a cow. He used it to shecht a pig, to slice a piece of pig. So there, with the shayla of min b'she'in b'minay means bitl b'shishin. So there, the shayla of min b'she'in b'minay, so the shayla of deraisa, your meat might be treif min deraisa. So we say, you know, let's be choshish that bliya happens at the base of shechita. And you need to be concerned about that. But what happened? That's when it's a sakhan shel nachri, because he caught all kinds of animals that are min b'she'in, meaning with what you're shechting. But when the yid used his knife for an avail, so he shechted one cow and it was a trefa, and he shechted a second cow that comes afterwards. It's not because he has fewer animals that he shechted that were not kosher. It's because the animals that he shechted are min b'mina, is what he shechted now. He shechted one cow, now he's shechting a second cow. So it's min b'mina. Min b'mina, which is both the baray, means it tells us that the shayla we have here is only a shayla with Rabbanan, that maybe this is a min b'mina, which midrabbanan needs to have shishim. Midrabbanan is both the baray, meaning it's, of course, the baray always going to be bottle. So since it's a shayla only Rabbanan, so therefore Chazal tend to be maker, to be less concerned by sakon shal Yisrael, that was used for a trefa, they said to be less concerned in that case, and you could get away with just wiping it off or cleaning or things like that. But if that's the difference between a sakan shel nachri and a regular sakan of a yid, if that's the nafkamina, then in the base of shechita by us, the fact that it was used many times, and the fact that it has a blia from this cremation doesn't make a difference. Because the blia, we're shechting here, sitting all day shechting, let's say, sheep. So we're shechting sheep, so all the blias that are in there are an avela and trefa of sheep. So then, the fact, even though we know there's a strong blia, that doesn't make a difference, because that strong blia still is a mimbimina with what we're about, the next sheep that we're about to shech now. Therefore, that would be a reason to be made on, say, either you have to put it into the hot water, that would not cause a problem for him to use that chalav later on for shechita.